the podcast on the road. That's what I did on July 4th. I took a trip to a place that is deeply rooted in my experience and that figures prominently in my latest novel, Line In. I interviewed some different folks at the Dickinson County, Virginia, Historical Society during their 4th of July writers' event. It was a great pleasure for me, and I hope to share their stories with you on this episode. Keep listening. Last July, my friend Mary Sheets and I visited a place that played a part, a big part in my childhood, but it was a place I had not visited since 2013. Ironically, with my friend Mary. I had a book event at the Johnny B. Deal Memorial Library in Clintwood, Virginia, which is in Dickinson County. Now, the first question would be, why such a faraway place? Since I live in Georgia, because the book I had just published was set in that county. And the reason for that was that it is the home of my maternal ancestors going back to the 1840s. There are deep roots for me there. One of the Cornelius Vanopers, there were 9 generations of them, landed there after moving from North Carolina. The very first Cornelius Vanover, it was pronounced somewhat differently in Dutch and means people of the river, came to New Jersey in the late 1600s. 150 years later, one of his ancestors made it to deep, remote Appalachian Virginia. Vanover is my grandmother's side. My mom's father was a Fraley, and they came from the next county over, Russell County. That's a wild story I will write about one of these days, but I won't go into it here. Along with the Vanovers, my family names are Ashby, Elkins, and of course Mullins, which is very, very common in that part of the state, and Ramsey. One of my great, great, great uncles was Rainwater Ramsey, who has several pages devoted to his exploits as a moonshiner, counterfeiter, possible sheriff murderer, and fake Cherokee. Lying In is the first book where I made reference to my people, I'm putting air quotes there, in Appalachia. It is a book that readers have responded to very well, and I have to admit I've pondered why. I think one reason is that it is about my background, and my heart comes out in it more. Most books about Appalachia, or let's say a lot of them, focus on the negatives there, negatives that can be found anywhere, but perhaps somewhat more so in some cases in Appalachia. That's another subject. I'll mention 2. Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver, which involves opioid addiction, is one of them, but it is a redemption story in the end of it. And Hillbilly Elegy, which is not about Appalachia, despite what the vice president claims. It's about his family, and they're crazy. That doesn't mean people in Appalachia are crazy. I did not set out to write a positive story about Appalachia, but I realize I did after the fact, and I imagine that is because it involves people or types of people my mom and grandma talked about. Not that there weren't bad people they knew, but they knew more good people. So, back to my story I was telling. Last year, when we went to the library event in Clintwood, we met some lovely ladies from the Dickinson County Historical Society. They are volunteers and officers working to archive the artifacts and documents and history of the county. It is a labor of love. They invited me to their July 4th event, and I made the trip this year. Happy to do so. While I was up there, it occurred to me that this would be a great podcast event because they are using their creativity and their effort to serve the county. The Historical Society is now housed in the former field house of the high school in Clintwood, which has since moved and been renamed and consolidated to Ridgeview High School. I remember the old school. I met other writers who had chronicled history or stories of the county, and that is what this podcast is about. Teresa Hawkins Mullins and her husband, Jim Scott Mullins, sorry about the pause, collaborated to write the novel Holly Creek, which was, I learned, the original name of the town of Clintwood, which is the county seat. Their love of the region, of music, and storytelling was very apparent. There are several writers here at this event in Dickinson County, Virginia, and I met a couple who wrote a fiction book, a novel called Holly Creek. And I'm going to talk to them for a little bit. They've also written a book about a dog with diabetes, which is fascinating. That's the only second dog I've heard of that had diabetes of someone I met. Okay, so introduce yourselves.
My name's Teresa Hawkins Mullins.
And I'm Jim Scott Mullins.
So they're Neri Couplets. And
did you grow up here?
Yes, ma'am. We're both from Dickinson County.
Okay.
Born and raised in Dickinson County and roots here for, you know, generations and generations. So.
Excellent. So, where exactly is Holly Creek and where and why did you pick that area for your story?
Holly Creek's actually the original name for Clintwood. So that's how the name Holly Creek come about. And we're both actually from Clintwood. So it was just natural. Like Scott said, our roots are here. It was just natural to have the setting here.
Okay. What was the impetus or motivation to write this book?
Well, I think, again, it comes from that love of history, love of family and culture, church culture, mining culture. Both of us were, you know, involved in that, you know, that whole thing of, you know, that had mining families, that had families that were churchgoers. My family in particular were, you know, a family of singers for several generations back. My dad was a coal miner. My brother was a miner. And we're just that whole story of that whole big cultural explosion of what, you know, what makes Southern Appalachia. That we couldn't tell a story without that being a part of the narrative. So we wanted to basically take those stories and wrap it around, you know, fictitious story of, you know, a young girl coming from outside this place, particularly from out in the west, out in Montana. And this was based on, you know, some of the travels that I had with Roadside Theater back in when I was doing some things with them for the Apple Shop. And Montana being a mountainous place, as most people would know. And so we created this this story of a young girl and her dad returning home to, well, the dad had married into a family that was from this area. The mother had since passed away, and the girl, the daughter, had known anything about her, you know, her roots here in Virginia. So it was that whole thing that fascinated us about someone that was just been, you know, that has roots here, but has no idea of their cultural identity here. So that kind of intrigued us. So you started to put it in a setting that's kind of post-war, you know, setting. The dad, Abram Garrison, is a veteran photographer. And, you know, he basically, you know, they've come home to settle some things over land and property that needs to, you know, be taken care of since the mother had passed away. So what they intend from the beginning to just to be something that they can just come in, take care of and leave, turns into something else.
Oh, wow. I got to read this real fast. This sounds great. Wow. So how long did it take you to write it?
Oh, gosh. We started the original draft probably a decade before, and life just kind of got in the way. And so we picked it back up and worked on it earnestly for about a year and got it out in less than a year's time, I think. But we had the majority of it. We redid some of it. But an important thing for us is that we have such love and respect for the area and the people here. And oftentimes people who aren't from here have a misconception. And sometimes in the media doesn't portray our people accurately. Yeah. And so we wanted very much to pay respect to our ancestors and to the people of this region, because you won't find harder working, more honest, just good people than you find here.
I'm really happy you said that. I had a discussion with one of the other writers here about a very popular book that came out and won the Pulitzer, and how people responded to that one. And and then there's also the one written by our vice president. So, and how those feed into the media portrayals that are not always as positive as they should be. So you have a background writing for the paper?
Yes, ma'am. I worked for the Dickinson Star newspaper for about a decade.
Okay. Awesome. Well, and I have one more question for your husband. What was it like to write a book with your wife?
Well, the whole experience of collaborating was interesting. It's an easiest word to say, because I'd never done this before. For me, it was a bucket list kind of thing to see if I could do anything or be a part of it. Teresa has been part of, working with media for years, working for the paper. So, my only writing really experience was, maybe like doing some songwriting and working with music and singing and things like that. So it was a unique, different experience for both of us to try to find this world that we were trying to look for, because you wanted to base it, everything in trees, everything, and an homage to mountain people and culture, but yet be able to have the freedom to create your own type of story.
Yes.
Line,
Have you thought about writing a book about music since you're a songwriter?
I've been approached about that a time or two. There's a big history there. I could sit here and talk to you all day about my family's singing history, because it goes back to my great-grandfather's time. And it ties in with a lot of the church history and the many colors that shaped it and made it what it is. So, yeah, that would be a wonderful thing if we could ever get around to doing that at some point. It's pretty extensive history.
Okay. Well, I appreciate Teresa and Jim talking to me today, and I'm going to keep talking to them to learn some more about this. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Another writer I talked to had also collaborated on a nonfiction book about a terrible incident in both of their lives. Marcia Sutherland Self and Becky Reiner White have written and published the book Our Blood Runs Black, the story of a mining disaster in McClure, Virginia, in 1983. It ended tragically for Becky's father and devastatingly for Marcia's father. Marcia shared about the incident and how they came to write the book.
Dickinson County is known for many things, but one thing it is known for is that it's coal mines, its history of coal mines. And I'm talking to a couple of ladies who have written a book about a coal mining disaster from 1983. So, what's your name?
Marcia Sutherland Self.
Okay. And the name of your book is?
Our Blood Runs Black, the McClure No. 1 Mine Explosion, 1983.
Okay. And my mother grew up in McClure, so I'm very aware of that. When I was a kid, the coal mining industry was more evident,
More booming years. It's definitely more booming than
years. Yes, yeah. And so the mines were more active. So tell us more about your book.
The book is more trying to be of a memorial for our dads, especially that my dad was in the mines at night. He had 67% burns, third degree, yellow breeze whole body. And then Becky's dad passed that day, and he only had 3 days left to retire. So it affected each one of us tremendously, but in different ways. Seven of them passed. Bobby Rasek's mom, of course, died. She was the first woman in the state of Virginia to die in a mine explosion. So many different stories that we've got to learn on, you know, one guy had a toothache that day and he really wasn't going in. And I think her dad, FC, even had a flat tire going in. And the buddy with is like, oh, it's just like, go in today. And FC's like, no, we're going in today, you know, and just different things. And my dad always took a Bible and did it with him. And he'd pray every night about 20 minutes during lunch break. He had a little Bible in his pocket. And the night of the explosion, Dad worked at the roof filter, which is in the front of the mines. But they found his Bible back to where 2,000 feet where the men were and had passed. And they said that you could hear my dad's prayers all over the mine. When people were coming and looking for him, they could tell where Dad was by his voice. And but by the time they did find him, he was back up to the face. And he left his Bible with the ones that were still not making it past. So we know Dad traveled up there and prayed for him for
something. A lot of people don't really have a clue about what
they deliver.
Miners do.
Right.
You know, what their work actually is. You know, we know what some people who do certain kinds of work do, but you wouldn't know what the miners do. To what extent do you write about their actual work?
Kind of a bit of an extent, because my dad and Joe Boy were on the roof belter. They were in the front of the mines. So once the continuous miner goes in there and cuts that coal, then the top is bare. And so then my dad and Joe would go in there with the roof belter and had to put bolts up to the roof to make it clear to keep on going. And that just continued on down the mines. And then they'd have to hang curtains where they'd be in, trying to keep the ventilation going. And so it's a continuous job. But there's one scooping and taking up coal all the time from the continuous miner is spitting out the coal on a belt. But then somebody's got to get it off the belt and get it out of the mine too. So it's a labor continuous.
Oh, yes.
Mine labor. But I guess what I found that I didn't realize was how far back the mine was. You can go back 2 miles. Some miles are 8 miles long and wide. It's not. They're just not as small mines. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was over in that area yesterday to go to where my grandmother's house was. I lived in Alba. And I noticed as I was going up the tracks that there was a sign that I'd never seen before that said ambulance entrance for McClure Mine number 41, I think. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I've never seen that before. So is that something that was done more recently
So that's the same entrance of McClure 1, but it's further back now. So they had to make a different entrance, an easier way to get in there, because they're so far back in the mounds of the mountain now.
Yeah, well, okay. So did you live in McClure? Or did you live in?
No, I grew up in Dane, and not Dane. I was born in Dane, and I grew up until I was about 6 in Trammell, and then I moved to Castlewood, graduated from Castlewood, and then I moved to Aberdeen, the area. I'm a court reporter. Have been for 37 years, yeah.
So, do you think that the mining industry has gotten safer over the years, or is it still a problem? Safety still?
I think the mines is as safe as the interstate. I think the mines is as safe as riding on a plane. I think we're all here for a purpose. I think God's purpose and plan for our life is already set. That's what I feel.
All right. How long did it take you to write this book?
3 years.
Okay.
And what's it like to collaborate with someone?
It's awesome. It's awesome. She came on board with me a year ago, and it just made it easier and flowing, and it just made it easier for me. A bittersweet time you know, but it was hell.
Is your first book?
It is. I read a lot of books, but they're true crime.
Oh. So are they been published?
No, they've been, yeah, they've been published, but it's a Supreme Court.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But I am publishing a book now. Okay. I am doing a crime, true crime, but a serial killer. So we'll see.
Hooray. Very good. Yeah, well, thank you for talking to us. Thank you.
This coal mine is very close to where my mother grew up. Coal mining still takes place in that part of Virginia, but not to the extent it once did. These ladies did a wonderful job telling the story, and you can buy this book digitally on Amazon for 99 cents, and it is worth far more. Print copies are also available. The book Holly Creek by the Mullinses is also available on Amazon. Another book that was available at the Historical Society event was on an entirely different subject, but it was one that interested me and was very well researched. Religious faith and church assemblies are very important to Appalachian life, and the isolated nature of the geography affects religion in several ways. People come together for community in the church, and sometimes small denominations that might face persecution or opposition in the wider world are drawn to remote places.
Hi. So I am talking to
Rosalie Fleming.
Great. And we are at the Historical Society of Dickinson County for their 4th of July extravaganza. Is this your first time you've been to this?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. So why are you here today in particular?
I know the answer, but I'm here because my daughter is the author of this book about the Church of the Brethren in Dickinson County and a history. It's pretty extensive history. She's done a lot of research on her grandmother, Normie Sluss Mullins, was a lifelong member of the Church of the Brethren. And Normie's dad, Charlie Sluss, was a pastor, preacher there, you know, in that church at the Pound River Church of the Brethren. And so I'm here helping promote and sell her book, along with my grandma.
It's a beautiful book. It's very thick, and it does show a lot of work and a lot of photography and such. And I'm looking forward to reading it. Did you grow up in this church?
No, I did not. My parents were old regular Baptist, and that is another old church in rural Southwest Virginia. Yeah, and that's the church that I grew up in. Yeah.
So, do you remember her writing this book?
I did not know that. I knew she was researching. I did not know she was writing the book until it pretty much was published.
So she kept it to herself.
Yes, she had saw me people that helped her research, you know, in the church and whose family grew up in the church. So that's how a lot of it came about.
Well, thank you.
As well as writers, there were many people who came to the event for other reasons. The Historical Society serves as a place for genealogical research and discussion, and there were lots of documents sitting out for review. I had some of my own. I took some of my family items, such as my mother's high school diploma from 1946, and several photographs, as well as the Ancestry.com family trees. Folks were there to do research and visit friends and family as well. There was a great deal of positive energy and friendliness. But another major part of the event was to honor the military. Dickinson County supplied hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands and thousands, of young men and then women for the armed forces since World War I. There was a huge display of photographs of these soldiers and sailors and Marines that had been donated from families. I had the honor to speak with a gentleman in his mid-90s, a veteran, about what the event meant to him.
Hello, I'm talking to a gentleman who is a veteran and is here at the Clintwood Historical Society visiting during their July 4th event. What's your name, sir?
I'm James Virgil Mullins.
Okay. He's a Mullins. A lot of people here are named Mullins. So, were you in the Korean War?
Yes, I was there twice.
Okay. And what years were you there?
65 and 66, okay. 70 and 71.
Okay. Okay. In Korea.
I was in Korea. I was in Japan when the Korean War started.
Okay.
And I was with the first contingent arrived
in Korea.
Oh, my. So that would have been in the 50s or the 40s?
In July 1950.
Okay. So why were you in Japan?
I was stationed there. I had joined the Army earlier and had been in Japan about 2.5 years when the war started.
I've noticed upstairs where they have all the photographs of the fellas from this county who have gone to the military. There are an awful lot of them.
Yes.
Yes.
A lot of Mullins.
Yes. Did a lot of your friends and family go to the military?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were, I had a brother in the military. I had numerous cousins, and they all served during either World War II and Korea, Vietnam era.
And you, right now, you live in Huntsville?
I live in Huntsville, Alabama, yes.
Okay. Is that where you settled, or did you live here for a while?
I had lived there off and on in the Army.
Okay.
And about 10 years all told. And when I retired, we were living in Springfield, Virginia.
Okay.
I had been stationed at the Pentagon.
Yes.
And when I retired from the Army, I retired there. And since we had been living in Huntsville so long, we decided just to go ahead and retire there.
Okay. Excellent.
And that was about 45 years ago.
So you were in the military for quite a while then, weren't you?
25 years.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you for your service for our country. And do you come to this event every year, or is this the first time?
No, I've been here several times.
Okay. Why is this important to you?
Well, there's so many people that I grew up with that, that are relatives of mine that are pictured here in a it's a good nostalgia trip for me to come and see those that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And it's and I like to buy the material that they publish here for my ancestral searches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Finally, I want you to hear from the secretary of the Historical Society and the lady running the show, sort of, not the only one. Susan Mullins spoke with me about the society and its work.
Now I'm talking to the lady behind this event. Introduce yourself.
My name is Susan Mullins. I'm the secretary treasurer of the Dickinson County Historical Society.
And how long have you worked with the Historical Society?
Since 2008, and basically first in the as a member, and then I was hijacked into becoming an officer.
That's usually the way it happens. So when did the Historical Society actually get started?
The Historical Society was started back in the early 70s with a group, and we was reorganized a couple of times. The final time was in 2008, became incorporated, and is now a 501c3.
Very good. What would you say is its mission?
Its mission is to preserve and protect the history of the county and the surrounding areas.
Okay. So the high school, from what I understand, closed and consolidated in 2015. Is that right? And you got this building?
Well, we got this building in 2022. As a result of consolidation, we did have a building that belonged to the school board, and because of the consolidation, they were going to demolish it. The town allowed us to use another building, which we quickly outgrew, and with construction of the new food city here in Clintwood, there was some damage to the house. And then the town, who has become the owner of the field house, graciously has allowed us to use this building.
Well, it's very nice. And I can see in the past year, you've done a lot of work in here. Yeah. So, what would a person see if they came to this building and the Historical Society?
You would see books, resource books that we use for genealogy. You would see memorabilia from the county schools, from the county courthouse, from different businesses in the town. Genealogy books. It's just a smorgasbord of history.
Well, today you're having a commemoration, although I think you do it at other times as well, of all the military veterans. And that's quite a bit upstairs. Do you think that you've gotten pretty much everybody who would be involved in that?
No, we don't have. Our guidelines for that is we want military men and women who are from Dickinson County or who have ties to Dickinson County. And
you saying it?
Even if they are just from Dickinson County, I don't think we've even touched the tip of the iceberg.
No.
But it is an honor and a privilege to do this for them.
So other than that, what do you find fulfilling about doing this work for the Historical Society?
The people. The people we work with, the people who come in and visit, just being able to talk to them and enjoy their company.
And so I'm here on July 4th, and I understand there's going to be a parade. Yeah. And I've been inside, so I haven't seen what's been going on outside with the. Are there a lot of people outside?
I have no idea. I have not been out since about 9:30. Sorry, I've not been out since about 9:30 this morning.
Okay.
So I have no idea what's going on out there.
Other than the parade, what's going to happen?
They have a band coming in to play. There are different vendors set up outside. I'm not sure what all is out there. They will have a band in here. I think it's supposed to start about 6. The parade will be at 3. They'll have some kids games, bouncy houses, the splash pad outside, which is a big thing for the kids. And other than that, I'm not sure. I've not seen too much of a schedule.
Okay. Well, thank you for talking to us, Susan. I'm just so impressed with how much work you ladies put into.
Well, the Historical Society is made up of volunteers, and all the work that has been done inside this building to renovate and everything has been done solely by volunteers, except for our carpet and our chairlift, and we had to hire someone to come in and do that. But other than that, it's all volunteer.
And they have a very nice chairlift.
Well, thank you.
Which is definitely needed for folks nowadays. So, thank you. Those bye.
I had several wonderful conversations with other folks at the event. One I didn't get on recording was Dr. Paul Buchanan, or Buckhannon, who said he'd been on every committee in the county. He had been a longtime science teacher in the high school and a big supporter of the work to chronicle and collect the history of the county. And just so you know, there are some really interesting stories and incidents and even people in Dickinson County, which is considered the youngest county in Virginia. Country music and bluegrass legend Ralph Stanley grew up on the next farm over from my mom. The coal mining industry defined the county for many years. My family's history is bound up with it. One character I hope to get into a novel is Rainwater William Ramsey, a great-great uncle of mine. He has a Facebook page, a pretty neat trick for a man who died in 1902. I want to read you an article from the Abington, Virginia newspaper in 1886 about Rainwater. This will give you a sense of how the newspapers read at the time, as well as what was going on for Rainwater. And as I start, I want to say that this is a newspaper report from the Abington, Virginia Southwest Examiner from Saturday, June 5th, 1886. Rainwater Ramsey. This is a name familiar to everyone who has attended U.S. court at this place for the past 15 or 20 years. for hardly has a session passed but what the shrill voice of a marshal could be heard calling Rainwater Ramsey to appear before the judge to answer to some of the charges which were pending against him, noted as a counterfeiter and feared as one of the most lawless and dangerous moonshiners that infest our mountain country. The minions of the law can congratulate themselves that for 12 months at least, he will be beyond their jurisdiction. For Rainwater is at this instant deploring his evil deeds behind the prison walls of the Buffalo's penitentiary. At a previous term of the court, he was convicted of counterfeiting, but by proving a better character than he had formerly borne and promising reformation, sentence was suspended. Time allowed his friends to petition for a pardon, but on a recent raid, two stills were found and destroyed upon his farm. A marshal was shot, and Rainwater, it was thought, did it. This was with other evidence of a damaging character, was thought by His Honor, Judge Paul, sufficient to cause a forfeit of the sympathy which had been allowed him. Consequently, he was arraigned, and in accordance with a former verdict, sentenced to the Buffalo Penitentiary for 1 year. And Deputy Marshal L.D. Davis and Mr. W.A. French last week conveyed him to his new quarters. Rainwater also went AWOL from the Confederate Army, but that was not unusual for mountain men in the Civil War. They were harder to hunt down and bring back. He also claimed to be full-blooded Cherokee, but none of his grandparents were, so that's probably biologically impossible. So what does this particular episode have to do with creativity? If it's not already obvious, let me talk about a conversation I had with my husband a while back. It was about the meaning of the Latin phrase ex nihilo, out of nothing, which is used to describe the Genesis creation account. We were discussing what it really means and how that related to theology. Unlike God, we do not create out of nothing, ex nihilo. Our creativity is forming and reforming sensory material, not making it exist in the first place. And whether we like it or not, that forming and reforming of that sensory material is hard work. The folks at the Historical Society of Dickinson County have created an environment from thousands of volunteer hours. That environment is a place of community and a rich archive of materials left to them by other people who want to help them create memories and records of those who went before. That is why we write and draw and compose and play and perform. The possibilities of what we can do with those sensory materials of sounds and sights and touch and taste and smell is infinite. I used to think there was a limit to musical tunes. Well, we haven't reached it yet, nor is there a limit to the stories we can tell or the paintings or sculptures we can create. I want to thank those who make creativity possible, as well as those who practice it. Thank you for listening.